Good morning. I've reminded you about this too many times already, so I'm not going to. But I will ask of you, we do need some more help with our directory in that we need people to be here while it's going on. Beyond just getting your picture taken, we need some folks to help check people in, get people to the right place, and also just to be a presence of the church here while the photographers are here. And so if you can help with that during any of these times, if you'd contact me or Denise and let us know, that would be great. We've got probably about two-thirds of the time covered already, but if you were able to help, that would be a lot of help. So let us know if you can do that. We'll also be sending an email out to remind you about it. And then there's sign-ups back there on the bulletin board for picture times. It's been a good weekend so far. I got to finally meet Lars and Janelle yesterday, which was exciting. I've talked to Lars on the phone probably four or five times and video called on Skype once. I told him I felt like he should be on a little screen there in your living room instead of in person, but it was good to finally get to meet this guy I've heard so much about and to see his new wife and to celebrate in that and to taste for the first time Abel Skivers. Is that something like that? If you've not tried these Scandinavian delights, I was told that if I waited till the fair in Junction City, the line was much longer, and I got them right there in Larry's house for free, which is nice, and they were very good. And they are kind of like beignets. I wondered if they would be. They are. But they're very good, and I recommend them if you get a chance. And also, we'll get to celebrate Dave and Katie's baby today in the shower out here in the foyer when we get done. I will admit, walking around Target this weekend through the baby department, looking down the list of things they had registered for, and everything we thought we would get was not in the store, and we kept going to the next thing, and I thought, I remember all of that, and I'm sure the technology is much better nowadays than it was then, but I remember going into Target, and they gave us this little scanner like they use when they're going around the store, and just checking off things I wanted, and my wife going, that's too expensive, don't put that on there, people will think we're needy. And, you know, we'd go on to the next thing and the next thing, and just the excitement of this new life coming. And it started with the stuff we were going to have in the nursery, and it went on to just this feeling of excitement, and then what you guys will get before too long, which is fear. Once you've gotten through the whole process, and you have this baby in your hands, and you get ready to leave the hospital, and you realize, oh, this is ours now, and we've got to make do here, and we've got to raise this child and act like we know what we're doing, and hopefully it'll all turn out well, and it's exciting to be a part of that with you guys, so I'm thrilled to get to celebrate that with you today. And also, you might notice stuff going on there in the foyer as we renovate slowly along the way. Dave worked this week on texturing our wall back there and did a great job, and we're excited about all of that coming together. Shirley Honecker got several pictures and things that we've put up out there. Roy spent some time hanging pictures this week, so it's slowly all coming together. All those things that you hate to have to do, but you need to do. And we're glad to see all those things happening. All right, Matthew chapter 16, if you'd like to open there. Matthew chapter 16. Little shorter section of text today that we'll try to pull from what we can to hopefully learn a little more about who Jesus is and what he would like for us to relay to those around us. And we'll begin in verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" It's interesting to me the way he words this question. This story is in three of the Gospels. We find it here in Matthew. It's also in Mark and Luke. In the other two accounts, he says, "Who do people say that I am?" Here he says, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And it's interesting to me that the question is, who do people say? Now, I see myself differently than you see me. Every time I pass by a mirror, I'm reminded of this. Because that's not how I see me. I see me in a different way. I have seen myself in a different way all throughout life. Now, sometimes I'm more hypercritical of myself than you might be, and sometimes I have painted a much nicer picture of me than is reality. A lot of those things are physical. Some of those things are about who I am as a person. I remember vividly, I'm not much of an athlete, and this probably shocks you, but I'm not much of an athlete. And I've always thought of myself as being more athletic than I actually am. Now, I think realistically, I am athletic trapped within non-athletic. But When I would, and we've talked about this before, when I would go out for kickball and PE in elementary school, I was not the first pick along the way. My athletic endeavors have not gone incredibly well. I went to college and finally got to, I did Little League, and we talked about that. I had one ball hit to me the whole year, went right through my legs. Got to college, got to play intramurals, which was the level of competitive that I needed. This was coming off my vast church softball experience. Got to college, got put on the F2 basketball team. There was A, B, C, D, E, F1, and F2. Where I was with a guy from South Africa who had never seen anything other than a rugby ball. We had this interesting collection of people, and I fit really well there on F2. And then I got to softball, intramural softball in college, which was the one sport I kind of knew because I had played church softball with a bunch of old guys that made me feel young. And I got out there on the softball field, and I remember just hoping I wouldn't mess up that day, and they put me at shortstop because we learned somewhere along the way I can't judge a fly ball to save my life, and I will dive at them, and they will hit me in the shoulder, and it's very embarrassing. So I played shortstop. And as I'm playing shortstop in this first game, I remember looking out into the crowd, and there are all the upperclassmen in the club that I'm in. And I'm thinking to myself, don't make a fool of yourself today. Just do okay. And I started to realize midway through the game, I'm actually okay at this. This is going all right. And I started to gain more and more confidence and more and more confidence until the last inning of the game, when we had a runner on, the other team had a runner on first. I'm out there at shortstop, and a hard, hard grounder got hit towards second base. And I did something that I have never done since, and I'm not completely sure how I did it, but it was fun to think in my mind what this must have looked like to the outside world. I ran to my left, and I got the ball, and in one unbelievable motion for me, I spun, caught second base with my left foot, turned, and doubled up the guy at first base. And I remember stopping right after it was over and thinking, did I really just do that? And I watched and saw seniors in my club who were on the back row of the bleachers stand up and start to go crazy. And I realized in this instant, I have changed what they think I am when it comes to athletics. Now, if you were not at that game and people came to you in the cafeteria the next day and said, you will not believe what Brian did in that game, they would have been shocked. They would not have believed you. They would assume the punchline was coming at some point soon. But to the people at that game, everything changed. When Jesus asked this question, who do people think I am? He absolutely knows who he is. There's no question in his mind. Larry read it to us this morning. He was there from the beginning. He was there from the very beginning of all of this. He knows who he is. He knows why he's been sent. He knows there will be things about it that will be incredibly difficult to go through. But he wants to know, what are people saying? Who do they think that I am? Because if I come here and I know who I am, and I live these years of my life and do what I do, but no one else ever gets who I am, then how much did it all matter? If no one ever completely understands what it is I am, what I've come here to do, how much does it all really matter in the end? So he asks them this question, who do people say that I am? Another piece of this might be, I've had this joking thing going on with several people here and with friends who will ask me, how are things in Eugene? And I will say, I think they're good. I haven't heard a lot of complaints, and then I'll always follow that with, but I'm probably not the one that would hear them. Someone will complain to somebody else, and you will talk about, what's up with that guy? And I may or may not know that there's a disgruntled few, or hopefully not as disgruntled many, that think, what did we do here? And for Jesus, if people are questioning him, the Pharisees are pretty bold about it, but what about just the general public? I don't know that they're going to be the ones to go to him and say, well, you're not really who you say you are. And so he says, who do people say that I am? And his disciples say, some say you're John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. Even leaders of the people thought that he might be John the Baptist reincarnate. Maybe John is killed and then he comes back to life and is still talking about the Messiah. There are those that think Elijah, because of things Elijah said, that Elijah would come back somewhere along the way and that maybe that's who he is. Because clearly, there's something different about it. He knows things other people don't know. We looked at John 4 in the teen class this morning that Shane taught. And we talked about the woman who's there at the well and how he sees things about her life that he should not know. And there are a lot of people as they encounter him that think this man is a prophet. And so all these people have all these different reasons and ideas of who he is, and they are built out of our own presuppositions and our misconceptions. How many times do you meet somebody and immediately have a thought about who this person is? How many times do you even have a few encounters with somebody and you think to yourself, this is what this person is like? If you're online much, you may have seen in the last couple weeks, there's a woman who is a reporter for ESPN who had her car towed, I believe in the D.C. area, and had to go pick up her car at the towing place and then proceeded to just rip the person who was working at the towing place. Everything from the condition of her teeth to her weight to her education, on down the line. And it's awful to watch. It's very uncomfortable to see this. And the whole thing's on video. And at some point in the midst of it, the woman who's working there warns this ESPN lady, you're on video, by the way, and she just keeps going. Now, we've seen an edit of the tape, and no one knows what's on the full tape because people keep asking for it and they don't provide it. But it makes this person look very, very bad. And I will admit to you, I watch a lot of sports on TV. That's where my athletic comes in. I like to watch them on TV. I watch a lot of sports on TV. I had no idea who this girl was before seeing this whole thing. And so it's hard for me to think of her in a different way than she thinks she's better than everybody else. She thinks people that have menial jobs, in her idea, like working at this towing company, are somehow lesser than her. It's hard to shake that once you've got it. And so when we come to people, I think we come in with some presuppositions and some misconceptions. The church I came from, we had 12 or 13 elders, depending on the time. About half of those guys had PhDs. They were professors at the college in town. Interesting dynamic to have an eldership that is more than half PhDs. And some people worked really well within that world, and some folks who had jobs that were not PhD-type jobs found it intimidating to talk to them sometimes because those guys were so educated, and they had these assumptions about what these guys must be like. And I always thought to myself, I wish you would catch these guys in a place where you would have no clue they were a PhD because they're just regular people like you and I, but you have a thought that because they have this education, they must somehow be different than you. It's amazing when we stop and think about it how much alike we really are. And yet we have all these barriers that separate us. These people have presuppositions and misconceptions about who Jesus must be for a lot of reasons. If you have for generations heard a Messiah is coming, and your great-great-great-grandparents didn't see it, and your great-great-grandparents didn't see it, and your great-grandparents and your grandparents and your parents, none of them have actually seen the Messiah come, then would you not begin to assume we will go through life and I will not see the Messiah come either? We know that God will bring this world to an end at some point. I don't think if we were cornered and asked about it that most of us think it will happen in our lifetime. I think we've thought that this is just something that is the tag on the end of a prayer of before the Lord comes again. We know he's going to come at some point, but we're just assuming that's somewhere down the road. And so if he did come, I think we'd be surprised. Hopefully, delightfully surprised, but I think we'd be surprised. These people are looking for any reality that could explain who Jesus is other than the Messiah. Because even though he fits the bill, the idea of the Messiah coming in their lifetime doesn't. It's not what they're expecting. So they start trying to explain in different ways. Now, culturally, we find ourselves in a world that has a lot of presuppositions and misconceptions about who we are. And we fight that every day the same way Jesus did here. What do people think about Christianity? What do people think about the church? What do people assume when they find out that you attend the Eugene Church of Christ, that you're a part of this body? They've got a lot of presuppositions, a lot of misconceptions that we work very hard, I think, to overcome. But what about you, he asks. Who do you say that I am? And I think that's the question he asks of us this morning. Who do we say he is? What does our life say that he is? When we talk to people about him, who is he to us? Because although it's important what people think, it's also important what the people here in this room think. It's important what his disciples think. Who do we say that he is? Who do the disciples say? And Peter says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Now, of course, it's Peter, first of all, that speaks up, because this is what Peter does. Peter is the quick one to talk. I was thinking about this in class this morning, because it's Shane and Lauren and I in there, and we've got a group of teenagers, and sometimes you will ask a question, great question, with an answer that is probably on the tip of someone's tongue, and everybody looks at each other. Myself included, by the way, because I don't want to be the grown-up answering the question. I want to let the teenagers answer the question, and I sit there and I think, should I say something? Should I not? Peter didn't suffer from that problem. Peter knew. Peter found himself in a spot where he had the answer. Now, Jesus will say in the next verse, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. The reason Peter knows is not just because he's figured it out because he's smarter than everybody else. It's not that he has some insight that he has brought about himself. It's not extra study that he's done. He has had something revealed to him that not everyone knows. And I think a lot of us have been in that kind of situation where we have something that we know that other people do not know. And then it's our choice of what we do with that information. This was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. What we have here in this just little section is foundation. It is what everything else is going to be built on when it comes to the church. And there's argument, depending on what circle you run in, as to whether this is talking about Peter, because Peter's name means rock. And so there's play on words here. Maybe Jesus liked puns, I don't know. There's the fact that Peter is a rock in a literal kind of sense. There is this confession that he makes, and there are some who believe that the rock that this is being built on, this church, is the confession that Jesus is the Christ. I tend to lean a little more that way. I think Peter's pretty important. But what Peter says here is what is really important, which is, you are the Christ, or you are the Messiah, depending on the version you're reading from. You are the one that we have been told about for generations. And you are finally here. And because of that, everything is about to change. And Jesus says that is the foundation that everything is going to be built on. The fact that we're still here today is built on that foundation that Jesus is who Jesus says he is. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he orders disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. He's bringing together here the idea of heaven and earth. Whatever's going to be on earth is what is going to be on heaven, which is to say, what are we about here on earth? And what should heaven be about? Are we focusing in on the things that matter here on earth, or are we getting caught up in things that really just don't matter all at all? Are we thinking about things that are eternal or things that are temporary? This foundation that is built is something that is everlasting. And it's amazing to think of, even now, how foundations are the thing that tend to last. Now, I went down to the coast to help out after Hurricane Katrina, and they took us down at one point to the street that ran along the beach, or what was left of it. It was a nice paved road at one point. It was partially paved and partially dirt by the time we got there. They showed us a billboard, and on that billboard, you could see a water line at 32 feet where the storm surge could come in. It's hard to imagine what that level of water would be like. As we went down towards this beach road, we were going on a perpendicular road, there was a point where they had separated debris. And we looked down both directions, and it was a line of debris about 9 feet tall, as far as you could see, both ways. They'd cut a hole in this debris so cars could get through to get down further into the coast. Once we got down to that coast road, and you know what it's like. You drive down the coast here, and clearly it's flat down there, and it's mountainous here. But there are some nice houses along there with great views and lots of windows. Down on the coast there in the Gulf, there are 2-3-story, just incredible houses. And as we drove down, what was left? Cement. Foundations. And there was the only reason you would ever know there was a house there is foundation, 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 foundation. When Jesus says this is the rock that it's going to be built on, this is the foundation that the church is going to be built on, who he is everlasting. And what we choose to build on top of that is important, but the foundation is where we begin. Whatever we do with this thing, he is going to be everlasting. And it says the gates of Hades will not overcome it. There's enemy number one. There is a Satan out there, and he would like to overtake this whole thing. And Jesus says right here, it's never going to happen. He's going to try, and he's going to catch you in ways you never thought of being caught before. But he will not overcome this church because this foundation is too strong. It's too great. Paul would put it this way in Ephesians. He, talking about Jesus, came and preached peace to you who were far away and a peace to those who were near. For through him we have both access to the Father. We both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Think about that. We have access to God through him. The God that spoke the world into existence, we have access to him because of who Jesus is. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household. You are no longer foreigners and strangers, or aliens and strangers, depending on the version that you have, but you are now citizens. But not only are you just citizens, you're members of his household. He has taken you in as an heir, as a child. Built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. This foundation that we read about right here is the thing that eventually will connect us with him. It is the starting point of the church. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. You too are being built. Do you ever find yourself downtown on, I believe it's Franklin, and they're building that high rise, whatever it is, I'm not sure, something to do with the U of O probably, but there's this high rise coming up, there's cranes and everything, and do you ever find yourself as you drive by there thinking, when are they going to finish that thing? I drove across the Good Pasture exit the other day and was amazed to find that it was done. There were no cones, there were no trucks, there were no flags. It was done. It was nice. I had that experience not too long ago out here at Gateway where all that comes together. It's done. All the temporary lights are gone and everything's come together. And I think sometimes, do we look at ourselves and do we think, well, when am I going to be done? I make the same mistakes too many times. I keep coming back to the same problems I've had in the past. When is it all just going to be done? When are we going to get it? Dave and Katie, with this baby coming along, I'm sure you will have days where you look at that child and you think, when are we going to figure this out? And I don't know that you ever quite do. Jesus says to us, Paul says to us here in this writing, we're still being built. We're still being built, but we are being built on that foundation that was laid back here in Matthew chapter 16. We are a work in progress all the time. And that's who he has designed us to be. We are constantly getting better. We're constantly moving closer to him, I hope. And then we will have times where things are not as good. And that's part of this walk that we are on. And all these people around us that have these presuppositions and misconceptions about what Christianity is, they assume that we think we are there. That we are that finished product, that we have it all together. And it's kind of funny when we think about it, because I think most of us would look ourselves in the mirror and think, oh no, why would anybody think that? Why would anybody think that I think I have it all together, and yet they do? And that's the challenge of Jesus here in the disciples. It goes from, I know who I am, to who do you think I am, and who does everybody else think I am? And that's our challenge too, because we serve that same Jesus that people don't understand. And sometimes we don't fully understand, and hopefully we keep trying to learn, but for that world around us, it is up to us to help people understand who he really is. All those same misconceptions, they might not talk about prophet, they might not talk about Jeremiah and John the Baptist, it's different misconceptions, but they're still there. And are we living out something that shows them something different? Are we showing them that he is still building in us something on this foundation? And do we rely on this same foundation ourselves? Or do we find ourselves like the foolish builder, just building on the sand? This morning, I hope you feel like you're building life on that foundation. I know there are days that we probably feel like we're getting it better than others, but that's all aspects of life, isn't it? There are days that we seem to have it down. There are days that we struggle a little bit more. And Jesus would say to us, as Peter says to him, I am the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And all of this comes back to me. So this morning, if you don't know him, today is the day to get to know him. Today is the day to take him on in baptism. Today is the day to change the way you're walking, to build on that foundation. Or if you find yourself off of that foundation, or maybe you feel like your foundation has just been wiped clean and you need to start to rebuild, we are here to help you with that. We don't have it all together either. We know that we are something that is being built constantly and not something that is a completed product, but we would like to build together. We would like to all be a part of that process, building closer to him on that foundation that he has set. Whatever need you might have this morning, whether it's to take him on in baptism or to have a congregation pray for you or just to share with us the things that you struggle with, please come as we stand and sing.